approach.
Thank you. It's really good to be here, so thanks for having me along. Just to declare myself from the beginning, I sit within the food technology function at M&S Food, but I'm not a food technologist by background, so I think the presentation that I've got is probably a little bit different from most of the content on the agenda today, but I hope that you find it at least a bit interesting and informative anyway. So what I'm going to do is just start with a video by way of introduction to ethical trading at M&S. I had a bit of a chat with Peter just before starting, and he said that he thought some people in the room might know a bit about ethical trade and ethical auditing, others might not. So we're just going to assume that we're sort of starting from scratch, but cover quite a lot of ground, I think. So the video does cover both M&S Food, which is obviously our primary interest, but the clothing as well. But I do think it's a really good introduction. So if you just bear with me while I get that up on the screen. Hopefully the technology will work.
The Marks & Spencer ethical trading journey so far. Trading ethically and doing the right thing is essential to the way M&S and our suppliers do business. Since we started in 1884, we have built our business on trust, one of our Plan A pillars today. This is a fundamental element of our ethical trading program. In partnership with you, our suppliers, we aim to build businesses where people are treated with respect, work in safe, decent conditions, and get fair wages. We formalised our ethical trade program in 1998 against a backdrop of shocking headlines and campaigns highlighting sweatshop conditions. This kick-started industry-wide standards and brought the world's attention to workers globally. Together, we meet these opportunities and challenges and today have a dedicated global team of 33 people to help and support you. With our stakeholders and partners, we have been involved in a number of global initiatives to improve the lives of workers. Let's take a look at some key milestones. In 1998, we first published our global sourcing principles, setting out M&S's beliefs and ethical trading standards. We were a founding member of the ETI. In 2005, working with the UK government, we began our partnership with the GLA. Today, we are working on a number of initiatives with our suppliers to improve working conditions. Here are some important parts of our programme. We realise that for true success and sustainable change, we need to collaborate more with other brands and retailers. We can't do this on our own. Partnership and trust are key to driving improvements in our supply chains. We've worked collaboratively with many stakeholders to refine our approach to ethical trade. This collaboration enhances results. Without all the external help, passion and drive from all our stakeholders, we wouldn't be able to deliver to the same high standards. It's important to continue this as we move forward. In 2010, we launched our commitment to work with our suppliers and partners to provide a training program for 500,000 workers by 2015. We're the only retailer to have publicly committed to develop a cost model to allow suppliers to pay workers a fair wage. We have a huge range of training materials available to our suppliers, from worker rights training to financial literacy to supervisor skills. This website can be accessed through the Supplier Exchange.
We train people to do everything. We train them to look after each other, be careful with their manual handling. We train them in food hygiene. Here, we seem to inspire people more into taking part.
We've got a lady here named Anne. She did the MVQ course, passed it. She's a changed woman.
In order to build ethical capacity, we need to listen to workers, understand and respond to their needs, and invest in them as we build the businesses for tomorrow. Listen more and you might be pleasantly surprised by what you learn.
I
think this is an amazing place. I think I know everybody here. I feel comfortable here.
There is no doubt that we have achieved some great things together, but we must not be complacent and forget the basics. On the ground, labour issues are actually increasing. The absolute basic human rights of workers globally are still not being upheld in many cases, and worker fatality and injury is not uncommon. Tragedies, such as the Rana Plaza factory collapse in Bangladesh, which killed over 1,000 workers, fatal factory fires, and mass fainting of exhausted workers, show we still have a long way to go to keep workers safe. Low wages drive longer working hours and exacerbate worsening conditions. Harassment, bullying, and discrimination mean some workers have no dignity at work. These issues are still the daily reality for many workers in the supply chains throughout the world, and this is simply not acceptable. We must all do more. So where do we go from here? It's more important than ever to up the pace of activity and work more collaboratively to have a sustainable impact. We need to future-proof our supply chains and get back to basics and develop the workers of the future. We will continue to roll out, scale up and innovate on solutions to tackle issues. And we need commitment and collaboration from all our stakeholders to achieve this. We need open dialogue and innovation and to share ideas and solutions. We need to make sure workers have a voice. We promote gender equality. We invest in education and health and improve the livelihoods of workers and smallholders. We want to continue to work with suppliers that we can trust and that are committed to produce great ethical products. Our customers benefit too, from better quality, better value products, and peace of mind. To do this, we need to have a reliable and productive workforce. Happy workers are more productive, so we need to work hard to make and keep our workers happy. Thank you.
Sorry about some of the technical difficulties there. It's not a video with the highest production credentials in the world, but I think it's quite effective by way of background. So just to start from the start, so why is ethical trade an issue for M&S? Well, first and foremost, it's about our trust with our customers and it's about our corporate reputation, our brand reputation. I'll come back to that in a minute. But really, fundamentally, labour is indispensable to any business and you've got to look after people to have a good business. Particularly for products. So you can't have good quality production without treating people well, helping people understand what they're doing and giving them the skills and training they need to do their jobs. And M&S in particular is seen as a leader in supporting suppliers to provide better working conditions for people. So it's important for our business that we continue to uphold it. So put simply, good people management means happy workers who can make better products more efficiently. I just wanted to start by way of a little bit of introduction to a couple of global economic issues that I think are important to understand labour in the food supply chain. So firstly, we're seeing increased strikes across the world at the moment. Now, people will strike for various different reasons. It might be because they feel powerless and want to stand up and do something about it. So in South Africa, for example, over the last 6 months, we've seen an increase in strikes, people saying, we want to be paid more, we want to be treated better. But sometimes it can be when people feel a sort of a tip of balance of power into their favour. So in China, for example, in the last 5 years, the number of strikes have doubled. One of the reasons for this is this reason on the right-hand side of the screen, which is that globally there's a shortage of skilled labour. So the demand for skilled people exceeds the supply of those people. In Africa, for example, economies are growing faster than the skills development of those countries can keep pace. So if people aren't treated well, often they have the choice to vote with their feet, and they will do. And so these issues need to be managed. In the UK in particular, as the food ethical trading manager, a lot of my work is in the UK because of the location of production. And I'm very clear that the single biggest issue that I have to worry about is migrant labour. So we all know that the migrant workforce is indispensable for UK food production and agriculture. It's not inherently a bad thing, but I do think there's a sort of perfect storm of people coming over from poor countries, low language skills, going to work in low wage jobs, living in communities where they're not always welcome, living in isolated communities if they work in agriculture, for example. And really it creates conditions that are ripe for exploitation by people that are minded to exploit people for their own benefit. So they might illegally traffic them into the country in the first place. They might demand fees for providing them work. They might take control of their bank account and claim benefits in their name, and so on. And unfortunately, it's a very uncomfortable fact, but it does happen. Some of the headlines on the screen you can see here. In the last 2 weeks, we've had a couple of new media stories. So a few weeks ago on BBC East, there was a story about exploitation in the Fens amongst people harvesting leeks. The front page of the Sunday Times magazine supplement, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before, was about human slavery in the UK food supply chain. So it is out there, unfortunately, and it's about retailers, their suppliers, and all the people within the food profession doing what we can to overcome it. And in addition to the criminality, I think there's actually a much more prosaic issue to do with migrant labour in food production sites, and that's just fundamentally communication. So maybe going back 20 or 30 years, everybody who stood next to each other on a production line would all speak English, and so we'd all be able to communicate to each other with their managers, with the factory MD and so forth. But these days it's just not the case. So one of our suppliers down in Kent has 27 different nationalities working on their site, and it just, you know, common sense says that communication is going to be very, very challenging in that site, both between workers themselves and how they make problems apparent, but also between supervisors and workers and how they get those communication methods working in a functional way in a busy production site. And it needs to be managed. And not to dwell on this, because this actually is a garment factory. You may have been aware of the news that in April this year, it was in the video, a factory collapsed in the capital of Bangladesh and actually killed 1,200 people, which was an absolute tragedy. And it really has four global brands, stepped up the pressure on ethical trade to a whole new level in terms of campaigning, government expectations, and so on. And even for the brands that weren't in this factory, and very relieved to say that M&S weren't, but other major global brands were, it's created a whole new level of pressure and actually cost. It's, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in terms of the remediation work that's gone in post this tragedy. And then just returning to trust, because it is so important, goes without saying that when you provide food to a public, trust is everything. And in particular for a brand like M&S, where we really trade in our communications on that element of trust. I don't know if anybody in the room has heard of Plan A. It's our sort of flagship sustainability programme. It's recognised to be one of the leading programmes in retail and beyond. And really, our ability to talk about Plan A and sustainability is only founded on our ability to say that we're a trusted retailer. So we are so very vulnerable to something happening which would compromise that trust. And just to put it in terms of pounds and pence, a study was done earlier in the year by the accountancy firm PwC, who concluded that M&S, across all our businesses, spends £1 million annually on ethical trading activities, but it actually saves a potential loss of share value of nearly £800 million, which is quite serious stuff. So what are the issues to do with ethical trade? Could anybody have a stab at what are the sorts of things that an ethical inspection of a factory or farm might look at?
Health and safety of the workers.
Health and safety, yep.
Trade.
Sorry?
Validity of work.
Yeah, so right to work.
Workers' hours.
Sorry?
Workers' hours.
Hours, yep.
Pay,
yep.
Child labour.
Age, yep.
Bullying,
yep.
Occupational health.
Health and safety, yep.
Accommodation.
Accommodation, should look at accommodation if it's on site.
Wages.
Wages, are people being paid the national minimum wage? Are they being paid properly for overtime according to national legislation? In the UK, you don't have to pay a premium for overtime, but often it is written into national law. Human rights? Sort of. Ethical trade will look at labour rights, which is a subset of human rights. So, sounds like you got most of them. So you already know all about ethical trade, so you don't need me. But forced labour, so modern slavery, as I said before, might not be sort of balls and chains slavery of old, but might be debt bondage, health and safety, legal minimum age to work, hours in the UK, retailers generally state that 60 hours is the maximum people should be working a week. Wages, are people offered regular work or are they, you know, offered minimal shifts but expected to be available at any time? Harsh treatment, freedom of association, so ability to form a union, which is protected, generally speaking, in national law, discrimination. And just to focus on one of those, so health and safety, which, to be honest, is probably the most prominent ethical issue that tends to come through in auditing, because it is the easiest for auditors to spot, to be honest, but it's also very, very important, and it is one of the easiest things for sites to fix. And I just think, fundamentally, health and safety, there should be no compromise, because nobody should be harmed making a product that would be sold in an M&S store or indeed in the store of any of our competitors. But unfortunately, work and agriculture is a dangerous place globally, so the stats show that every 15 seconds somebody dies from a work-related accident. That's 2.3 million people a year. And even in the UK, 150 people were killed at work last year. So it's important to be addressed. So what about the M&S approach? Monitoring and auditing is a very important part of our approach, but really what I want to emphasise today is it's really only one of the tools in our toolkit. So if you just look at this diagram, we've got monitoring on the right-hand side, but we really try and look at what the audits are telling us and what are they saying about what are the root causes why things might be going wrong. So lack of training, for example. Once we've identified those root causes, we do a lot of work with our supply base, holding meetings, holding conferences, developing toolkits, making available case studies to try and build the capacity of sites to address those root issues. And also, very important, is the collaboration work we do with others in the industry, with initiatives such as the Ethical Trade Initiative, which brings together brands to tackle ethical trade issues, and also the Gangmasters Licensing Authority. Is everybody aware of the GLA and what they do and what their role is in the industry? So the GLA was formed in 2005, really in response to a tragedy of a year or so before, when approximately 21 people were killed or drowned in Morecambe Bay, cockle picking, because they were sent to work on a temporary basis and with completely inadequate provisions for their health and safety. So after that, the GLA was formed in order to regulate the supply of temporary workers into food and agriculture by the provision of licences and the revocation of those licences. So a very, very important body for our industry. So what are we doing? I think actually one of the biggest assets of M&S is that we have a transparent and known supply base. So we know our suppliers, we visit them on a regular basis, and actually food safety is the reason why our technologists are constantly going out to sites, talking to suppliers, making them aware of our expectations and helping them to understand the M&S brand and what it stands for. We require all sites to be registered on a platform called SEDEX. Again, some of you may be aware of SEDEX. It's effectively an online database to share ethical trade information between supplying sites and their customers. And what SEDEX was set up to do is to avoid duplication. So previously you might have had M&S asking for information, Sainsbury's asking for information, Tesco asking for information, and so forth. And as you're probably aware, often customers will share a supplier, so it's a completely inefficient way for us all to ask for separate information. So the idea is everybody pulls their questionnaires and their audits on SEDEX and we can all draw them down. We require ethical audits for all of our first-tier sites, so everybody that labels and packs with our brand. In addition, in the produce supply chain, we go further down because that's higher risk because of the amount of people that are needed to harvest produce, generally speaking, and the fact that it tends to come from higher risk countries. We set an audit frequency which depends on country risk, and really what we try and do is work intelligently with suppliers when non-compliances are found to understand why they've come about and work with them to resolve them rather than sort of take a very black and white approach of saying you found something wrong, you know, you're no longer our supplier, etc. We don't think that that's a way to work. We've also got a farm assurance standard, Field to Fork, which includes 10 ethical questions. We have an additional due diligence programme where I commission audits for parts of the supply chain, you know, further tiers down where we wouldn't normally audit, and also to audit the auditors. And additionally, constant engagement with NGOs and other stakeholders are a really important part of our programme. So ethical audits, we have a code of practice which makes clear our expectations around ethical audits. Importantly, M&S don't commission ethical audits, generally speaking. It's the supplier's responsibility to commission them and then make them available to us. We have a list of approved auditors. So in the UK, most are done by three big companies, SGS, Intertek and Bureau Veritas. We have a preferred audit methodology, which is common with other retailers, come on to in a minute. We ask for semi-announced audits, so a 2 or 3 week audit window. As I said, frequency depends on audit risk, country risk, and SEDEX upload is mandatory. So the methodology we ask for is called the SMETA methodology, which stands for SEDEX Members Ethical Trade Audit. It's the one favoured by all UK retailers, pretty much, apart from Walmart, who slightly goes their own way. And the audit contains 4 key different methods. So management interview, both at the open and the close of the day, tour of the site, which is particularly important for health and safety, but also, you know, spotting suspiciously young-looking people, worker interviews, so a number, based on a sort of sample set, a number of interviews, both one-to-one interviews but also group interviews, and also a review of documents, wage records and attendance records to find evidence of wages paid and hours worked. The standard report format, and the audit will cover all these issues here that we've already talked about. So during the actual audit, the audit will close with an agreement of a corrective action plan between the auditor and the site. Both will sign that piece of paper there and then on the day, and that lists out the non-compliances that are found, which are classed as major and critical. That then gets posted onto SEDEX. I will pull the audit off SEDEX, I read it, and I give it a grade. So the audit itself isn't given a grade by the auditor, but that's what M&S then applies on top. Sainsbury's will apply their own grade onto it as well. So we have red, amber, green, based on the number of non-compliances found. A letter is sent to the supplier, and importantly, that's drawn to the attention of the buyer and technologist as well. So a really, really important part of our approach is that it's linked to the buying category, so they know about the ethical performance of suppliers rather than it being managed in isolation by me and others in the team. We ask suppliers to commit to closing out the issues, which may be done by desk review, particularly if it's something that can be proven by paperwork, or it may require a follow-up audit. And also, just to really emphasise, audits are important, but I also think our people are equally, as if not more, important in terms of the part that they play in this. So I do technologist training on a reasonably regular basis, and what I say to them is your role is essential because you are the most listened to voice. As much as I like to think suppliers find me hugely influential, unfortunately it's not necessarily the case. It's that technologist who really kind of holds the influence in that buying relationship. And by them and the buyers talking about ethics, it makes it part of the commercial package of being an M&S supplier. Part of doing business with M&S. So technologists will be involved in a monthly compliance reporting cycle, so if we have sites that haven't had audits but should have done, they'll be involved if a critical issue is found, so each critical issue, for example, child labour or non-payment of national minimum wages or a real risk to life and limb, they will be involved in what the appropriate course of action is for that issue. And then we ask to keep issues on the pad with suppliers, so as they're having their visits and their phone calls, bringing up the issues found and asking what progress has been, communicating new sources of supply and really using their eyes and ears on site visits. So when I train technologists, I'll take them through a series of photographs and we'll try and spot what the issues might be. And I use these two graphics here. So the top one is, they're both quite cheesy, but they seem to be remembered, and I do know showing a rat is very provocative for food technologists, but it's about saying what they can do is switch their ethical radar on, so they don't have to be experts, they don't have to have read an encyclopedia on ethical trade, but they should just look out for signs that things might not be quite right and effectively smell a rat and call it when they see it. And I do remember someone saying to me, if you're on site and you see something and you sort of have a really uncomfortable feeling in the pit of your stomach, that's probably when you know that something's not right and you should pick up the phone and do something about it. So what are the benefits of ethical audits? Well, it's a verification method to a given standard. It gives us confidence that certain systems are in place, so there's a way that wages are recorded, there's a way that hours are recorded, can identify weaknesses, and do result in a tangible list of issues that can be corrected and put in front of a CEO or owner, etc. But I would contend that audits aren't enough to actually go back to what we were talking about at the start of the presentation and really safeguard the trust in our brand. And just a couple of reasons for that. Top left-hand corner, in today's age with social media and new technology, anyone anywhere can start a campaign just from their mobile phone. And they do. And what the consequence of that is that factories and farms should be treating people well 365 days of the year and not just the day of the audit. Equally, in the top right-hand corner, it's an image which gets at effective workplace communication and representation. So having committees, whether it's part of a union or just an elected body otherwise, audits are really bad at spotting how effective communication is on site. For example, South America is a key sourcing region for us for some of the fruit and veg we sell. A South American auditor does not pick up poor workplace communication. It's just not in their skill set and cultural awareness to do so, but it's really important to us. Bottom left, so we talked before about slavery in UK supply chains, criminal activity. A case recently, the BBC case I referred to, focused on a leek production site, so a farm and a pack house, into which there was a labour provider supplying labour. And that labour provider had subcontracted out some of that labour provision to an individual who turned out to be exploiting people in a very horrific way. There is no way that an ethical audit of that farm and production site would have spotted that, because it's hidden and it can't be found by one day looking through filing cabinets. Even the best auditor wouldn't have found that. So we need to have other ways to address that. And also some really complex challenges. So I don't know how many are aware of the living wage movement and the debate around living wages, but it is gaining prominence in the UK, but also internationally in places like Kenya, which is one of our biggest sourcing countries. And it's that argument that there is a gap between the national minimum wages set by government and poverty indices, which say this is how much you need to have a decent standard of living, and the national minimum wage doesn't provide for that. And the consequence of that situation is that there can be people working in food supply chains who are living in poverty, which is a very uncomfortable fact, I think, and not something that ethical audits are ever going to get at, that sort of challenge. So again, there has to be other methods. So what do ethical audits fail to deliver? I think they can identify symptoms, but not always root causes. They don't necessarily identify those more difficult, greyer issues, so the communication thing. There's a huge problem in certain parts of the world, and particularly in China, less of a key country for food, but really big for clothing, of audit fraud. So if you're a Chinese garment factory, you can go and hire someone to tell you how to cook your books and pass an ethical audit with no intention of actually being a high-performing site in terms of looking after people. Often the solutions that are concluded within an audit might be sort of sticking plaster solutions but don't get at root causes. And really they only look at legal and just beyond legal requirements. So they don't tackle those key labour challenges. But M&S, as part of Plan A, our sustainability programme that I mentioned, we think that we are, in addition to recognising the importance of audits, doing a lot to go beyond as well. So the top left is a picture of one of the many supplier meetings and conferences we held. We hold this year in April, we held our flagship conference in Wembley. We had 1,200 people attending. Al Gore was our keynote speaker. Our CEO was there, all of the board were there, so that's absolutely M&S leadership saying these issues are important. As I mentioned before, we collaborate with the likes of the GLA and the Ethical Trading Initiative. The top right is what I'm going to come on to, which is our scorecard approach. And then bottom right is our training approach, which I'm also going to come on to. So we sat down in 2010 with the challenge of saying, okay, ethical audits get us to a certain place, but don't get us as far as we want to be. So what really makes a great place to work an employer of choice? And equally, how can we measure this? And we did a lot of thinking, and we came up with a framework for what would be a model factory, not just looking at ethical and people standards and HR, but also joining that up to the environmental leadership we wanted our suppliers to demonstrate, and equally the economic, or what we call lean manufacturing, so production efficiency leadership. And we believe that if we join these three elements together, that's what creates a model factory, and those are the sorts of sites that we want to have within our supply chain in the future. We did a lot of research into what that looks like, so we looked at our audit programme, we did supplier visits, we worked with NGOs, we discussed with our buying teams, our meetings, etc. And what we were doing is we wanted to create really strong workplaces that actually makes the food industry an attractive place to work. Believe it or not, it's not necessarily the most appealing industry for people to go to work into on the shop floor level. That's why migrant labour is so important. But we actually want to make it a vibrant and attractive industry for people to work in. So we've created these sustainability frameworks to act as a standard for suppliers to work towards to go beyond that compliance audit approach. Three frameworks, so lean, ethical and environment, and really clear building blocks of activity so that suppliers can work towards a continuous improvement over time. It's scored such that depending on how far you are through the frameworks, you're either provisional, bronze, silver or gold. And importantly, it's integrated into a balanced scorecard. So the buying team will sit down on an annual or twice yearly basis with the supplier, and they'll evaluate them on commercial performance, technical performance, innovation, service, so supply chain delivery, but also now on sustainability, because we've created a standard to assess. And we have had situations where, all other things being equal, technical performance, commercial performance equal, business has been awarded because of superior performance on this, which I think is a really interesting step forward. And we have been able to demonstrate that those sites who have reached a certain level on the framework are realising business benefits for themselves. So for ethical, there's 14 different sections. I won't go through them all, but for example, one of them is training. One of them is about, call it great place to work, which is all about having a staff survey in place and what it tells you in terms of how people like to work in that site. We haven't had a gold factory yet, but we have lots of suppliers self-assessing at silver level. So that's where we're really driving momentum to get people to silver. And once a site has self-assessed at silver, we then go and pay a day visit to them, which we say is not an audit, but it's a discussion. So we have presentation, we go on a factory tour, etc. And if we're satisfied that they do meet the silver level, they're then validated as silver. And our buyers are incentivized on having as many silver sites within their category as possible. So it all joins up with the commercial angle. And we don't just leave suppliers to go off and do that and pray for the best. We've got lots in place to help them progress through that. So whether it's toolkits, websites, meetings and so on. So that's a snapshot into that. One of the other things I wanted to tell you about was the work we're doing around training. It was in the video at the start. You might have caught it. We have a commitment that by 2015, we will have enabled the training of 500,000 workers in our supply chain. We're already at 320,000. Actually, a lot of that is through the activity of our clothing business, but we're really ramping that up in food as well. So in September, we announced a £100,000 training fund in Africa for suppliers to apply to, and we'll match fund whatever their contribution is. So that's training around workplace communication, around developing the skills of supervisors to be good first-line managers. And also in January, we're asking suppliers in the UK to deliver these awareness-raising weeks on Money Week and Healthy Week. So we're providing them the toolkits, the ideas, the posters, the videos, etc., for them to have these weeks within their sites where they really build awareness on health and money. And why are we doing this? Well, partly we think it's a good thing to do. It hopefully imparts skills to people who wouldn't otherwise have that information. But there is a hard-nosed business angle as well. Absenteeism costs the UK economy £32 billion a year. If people are healthier, they're more likely to come to work and be efficient at work. Equally, financial stress is one of the key drivers of stress, which is the second most common health issue that causes people to stay away from work. So if we can help people to manage their money, it helps alleviate that and also works into that living wage challenge that I spoke about. So there isn't enough money in the food industry at the moment to raise people's wages by 20% to meet the living wage, unfortunately. But I do think that we have a responsibility to help people to manage what income they have better. So that's that. And then the third thing I wanted to tell you about was an example of an industry response to a really tough issue. So going back to that hidden exploitation scenario I was talking about with the leek supply, where it's very, very hidden and difficult for a retailer to spot and tackle on our own. So we've all got together, or almost all of us have got together, and funded a piece of work called Stronger Together, which is about providing a whole suite of materials for employers and for labour providers to help raise the profile of some of this criminal and exploitative activity and help people know where to go to if they think that they're being treated badly, and actually explain what being treated badly looks like in the first place, because again, going back to the fact that they're from poorer countries, they don't speak English, people don't necessarily understand how they should and shouldn't be treated. So it's key for that. So just to conclude, compliance is important. It's part of our reputation and license to operate. That's where audits fit in. But we do believe in going beyond compliance through a number of ways, some of which I've talked about. And in doing so, we think suppliers can effectively plan their manpower, can generate a skilled labour force in the food industry, retain people, engage people, have productive people, reduce accidents, reduce costs. So just to conclude, ethical trade is a key supply chain risk. Auditing is an important tool, but to really tackle challenges, we need to go beyond audit. Thank you.